podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Tour Live. It is Neil Atkinson. I am joined by Steve Evans, by Adam Smith, and the FAI's worst nightmare, Siobhan Began, all with me for this one, as we are going to get stuck into the aftermath of the Napoli game and look ahead to what is a massive game against Tottenham Hotspur on the horizon on Sunday. Also coming up, we've got Dom King, Green's lad, on Jordan Henderson's book, which he's worked on with Jordan, and Sean Davies on our upcoming show at the Unity as part of Homotopia. We've got people, I think it is John Gibbons, who is speaking to both of them, but you'll find out in the fullness of time. Everything is to come, but we are going to start off with the game against Napoli. And got a question for you, Sean, really. Firstly, you know, is the manager was very...
Was it from calling me Sean? My name's Siobhan.
Siobhan, sorry, Siobhan. I just mentioned Sean. Good on you, Siobhan. No. Excellent stuff. If this was a recorded show, Siobhan, if this was a recorded show, I'd just start it again from scratch. But we've, you know, I've made this tour live bed and I've got a lie in it. In his press conference, the manager was adamant that this was not a dead rubber. I mean, there's a number of questions this throws up. Number one is, how do you refer to an alive rubber? Is it an alive rubber or just a rubber? And secondly, how in the year of our Lord Jesus Christ 2022 are we still referring, and I include anglicised Germans in this, to a phrase from frigging Bridge this much is something I could do with knowing. But the point was, he was right. It very much was a proper game of football between these two sides.
On the terminology, I'm all for just not using the term rubber in this context, because it's a bit evocative for my liking and I'm not into it. I've read that it's got origins in bowls as well.
And, really?
Yeah, something to do with when something reaches 100. Matter now. Maybe that's it, yeah. Let's just, if we have to refer to it. But it's quite clear we don't, because it wasn't. I know it was, but it didn't feel like it did. It felt really like fizzy from the beginning. It was like there was an anticipation to it, even though that there didn't need to be. From the off, I think that it was played at a pace that suggests it definitely wasn't. Didn't feel like a dead rubber. And I think that both teams probably had a bit of a point to prove. Napoli have all of a sudden, not out of nowhere, but certainly out of nowhere for some people, got this reputation as someone who can really fuck shit up this season and do something serious. And obviously we were on the end of that, where we were like, yeah, probably.
Fair play.
Essentially, yeah.
You fucked our shit up there. Fair play, geez. Well done.
Liverpool's obviously the league for me, and that they need some sort of, God needs some sort of positivity to get us through the weeks, because Saturday to Saturday is a fairly miserable life to be living right now. And I think that they definitely had a bit of freedom to express themselves and with no risk. And I think that, as well as the teams having their narratives going on, I think there were some individual narratives. I think that, on reflection, Curtis Jones playing was a really, really good idea, because he'd come in for a bit of stick that was perhaps due, perhaps not. Obviously, Salah and Darwin probably wanted to be able to play with a bit of freedom. Fabinho, but having a decent game will have made an impact. So I think for many reasons, beyond the results, which didn't matter, it was an absolutely proper game of football, and it was a joy to watch.
Yeah, it strikes me as really interesting, Steve, to be honest, because you don't get many of them, many games where it's a little bit like the comparison I always use is sort of test match cricket, where it's basically about seeing how good we are. How good are we? How good are you? This is we each know we're at a certain level of good, but how good are we? And, you know, you give two proud teams the prospect of a proper game and they just grab it. It was the sort of thing that I don't think it would have gone the way in which it went in the era of behind closed doors football, where I think it would then maybe have just been played out a little bit more. But it was a little bit of sort of 60,000 in there as well. You know, we're coming to your gaff, etc., etc. And it just strikes me as really interesting, because, you know, the way we see football in 2022 is everyone's dead clever and everyone's full of long-term prep, but these two managers picked really strong teams, and those really strong teams just went for it.
Definitely, yeah. And, you know, the both sides have got a little bit of history between them as well. We've had quite a lot of encounters over the past 5-6 years, really, in the Champions League. And I think the defeat over there during the year will probably still be fresh in the memory for a few as well. So they want to prove a few wrong, really, because it was up there comfortably with probably our worst performance of the season. So there'll be a few on that team when they see you come out, that they'll say, right, I want to write a few wrong. So I was really pleased that Jürgen put a strong side out, because I thought we definitely needed a bit of momentum going into the weekend, and he wanted to get a result. And as I say, you go out there, get a couple of early goals, you never know what's going to happen with regards to top in the group. So, yeah, it was definitely wasn't a dead rubber, definitely wasn't a friendly. There was, you know, Napoli a very good side. I listened to the pre-match show with Ian Ryan, obviously, and you had the Napoli supporters on there saying, they said no Italian side's ever won all six group league games since AC Milan, I think, back in God knows when. So, you know, they'll want to come and get that as well. So Liverpool would have been hell-bent on trying to stop them. So it was a cracking game of football, I thought. Two really good sides, really enjoyable.
Really enjoyable, Adam. Obviously, it helps when you win. That is, you know, an endless part of this. It's always easy to say, hey, wasn't that a deeply pleasurable experience because you got to win the match. But I think winning the match and keeping a clean sheet, you know, there's a realm where Liverpool could have won that game 3-2, 4-2. I don't think everyone would feel quite the same about it. Not only did Liverpool keep a clean sheet, but it wasn't through goalkeeping heroics or anything like that. They just limited the quality of opportunities Napoli could have across the 90 minutes. And it was clear that Napoli are a good side. We got to see that with the evidence of our own eyes as the game wore on. But they still were kept out of Liverpool's final third.
Yeah, I've been a bit confused by all of it, to be honest with you, Neil. Like, you know when you have a fight with your partner and you're just pissed off with them, and it doesn't matter what they do, you're just still really pissed off with them. That's what I've been like with Liverpool. They've just pissed me off lately, and there's nothing they can do that's making me any happier. But when you're talking about sort of, you know, Napoli, a brilliant, Siobhan said before about them being the form team in Europe and all that sort of stuff. Like, it's absolutely true. But I think that they're obviously doing well in Italy and stuff, but the big reason they've sort of got that reputation is because of how much they absolutely spanked us all over the place of theirs. But we're shite this season. So I'm a bit like, I don't understand. Like, they battered us, but we've been rubbish. But we also beat City and we beat Bournemouth 9-0. And, you know, we battered Rangers. So we've been a really good team this season, but also we've been not very good at all when the kind of, you know, when we've needed to be almost in the games where we should win. So I didn't know how I felt at the end of the game. Do you know, when you're like, I'm glad we've won. I'm glad it was 2-0. It's done all of the things that I wanted it to do. I still hate these bellends, and I reckon I'm still going to. I think just a bit one of them where I just didn't have any real clue what was going on with it, and I'm just annoyed with everyone still.
I think that's, Adam, I think that's perfectly understandable, because the big thing about this is, I think it's the Arsenal game is for me was a really good example of this idea of, well, when are you going to trust them again? When are you going to trust them to put a back-to-back? So now you're at the point after the Leeds and Forest game, you're a bit like, well, when can I trust you to put a back-to-back together? Because there's, you know, you beat City, you beat West Ham, and then Forest happens. Okay, you then go and beat Ajax. And then from there, you find yourself basically, you know, getting the great results against Ajax. We're all delighted about it. And then from there, then, you know, you let us down again with the game against Leeds. And this is the difficulty around this is, it is that idea that trust sort of erodes in them, and then the trust erodes in each other. And what I think you actually got to see against Napoli was, I thought trust increased with each other on the pitch before your very eyes. And that was one of the reasons why I was really quite buoyed by it.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. I think that idea of kind of, we're all together and we're all fighting for the same thing. Because I'll be honest, that was my big fear. Because when we went into the Leeds match, a lot of Leeds supporters were done with Jesse Marsh. They were like, get rid of him, want him off, gone. And in the game, I was thinking, but you can see their players are still fighting for him. The fans might be done with him, but the players aren't. The players are still fighting for him. And there was a little bit of me going, Arar's still fighting for the manager. I don't know. I'm really a bit unsure about it all. And so the Napoli game in that way kind of renewed my faith in the idea that actually, yes, they are. They are all still fighting for him, and they're all still fighting for each other. And as you say, they're finding their way. And that, I think, in previous seasons where this Liverpool team has been at its best, is they found their way. They've worked together to kind of figure out how we break down this team, or how we, you know, we've got each other's backs. And there's been quite a lot this season of not having each other's backs. Trent almost being left to hang out to dry at right back with no one really chasing back. And then it was really notable when Elliot came in and properly chased back and helped him out. And everyone was going, oh, good. I didn't think Elliot could do that defensive stuff, but he's doing it really well. In fact, it was when Milner was there, wasn't it? He was doing all that for Milner. But that's when we've been at our best. And in the Napoli game, I thought we began to see that come back a little bit. So I did feel a lot happier over that.
The manager says, Steve, you know, he talks about it today about sort of playing your way in. That in the press conference, for me, it's a really interesting quote, which is that the only way to get out of this is to get through it. And that is, you know, I think that is a part of his sort of his mentality, is that they've got to, we're all in this together. There's got to be a knuckle and down process, but there is not a magic button. And everything is the tiniest steps. There's no sudden magic button from a Liverpool point of view. And that to me is the thing that he's now very, very clear on, I think, in every single way. Like, a system change isn't just going to change it. Going back to the old system's not just going to change it. Everything is about these little steps. And I think that we may well see another rocky first 10, to be honest with you, on Sunday, because I think he feels as though that belief has just got to be earned over and over and over again. And hopefully it perpetuates something.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's as frustrating as it is to watch this at times, that rebuilding of confidence and faith and trust now, trust in the process, trust in the manager and what he wants to do, and really just sticking to what, you know, what he believes in, trying to find that muscle memory of what he'd been through in the past, and just, you know, eventually it will get better and things will improve. So it's not a nice process to go through, because, you know, I think there's a lot of different sort of factors in the reasons why we're not playing well this year. Fatigue being one, system changes, injuries, obviously. So slowly but surely now people are coming back and hopefully back to a system that they all know, and a system they recognise that what they've been successful on in the past, that then they can then, you know, start to rebuild. So hopefully starting with Spurs on Saturday, so Sunday. So hopefully now we've got players back from injury, we can go back to formations that we know work, and hopefully the midfield will be a lot more secure. Like, we know the injury is going to Henderson's back, so we've got the three main lads available in the midfield. So hopefully things like that will just start to build confidence in the team and let the players go out there and express themselves a bit better.
There's in the comments there, Live a Bird, hopefully the real one, Siobhan, pointed out that we've missed Konaté massively. There was a couple of things, really. Firstly, his starting position was higher, 5 yards up the pitch. The manager talked about being more compact, and I think he did help massively with that. But then the next thing was, he then comes all the way into midfield to win it at times as well, which therefore, I think that had an impact, I think, on Fabinho, on a couple of others. It wasn't just the idea that the starting position is higher, but he will defend every situation higher. And I think that really helped Liverpool tactically.
Yeah, I think he plays with a great deal of kinds of power and force, and he's absolutely fucking massive. I think that also, you know, Klopp said, I can't remember if it was in the press conference or previously, but he said that when he was asked about why there's been so many changes back and forth to how we've looked, he said, well, there's two really obvious reasons, and that's the availability of players and that we've not been defending very well. And I think that what he probably knew prior to midweek was that bringing Konaté back in was going to mean that we probably defended a little bit better, and therefore, you know, we're able to go back to that system that people are familiar with without that weakness in defence. So yeah, he really does like raise everybody else's game, and where possible, you know, I'd really love it to be him and Van Dijk as the partnership for any game that we want to take seriously and want to go in with a clear outcome of winning. And I really loved his Matip style Maisie runs as well. I don't know whether he's done them and I've not observed them, but I've never noticed them do that before.
It's an innovation. He's had a look at it and thought,
it's like he's looked around, he's had all his time to look around, he's gone, right, well, Gomez runs kind of fast, I know I can do that. Van Dijk's massive and dead strong and comes up against anyone and comes out the winner. Yeah, I can do that. What's missing from me game? Hang on a minute. Adventures. Madness. Chaos. So, yeah, it's great to see that he's brought that in. He's a bit of an everyman now. He's like a one-man band. Love him.
There's a kick drum attached to his right heel.
It makes
you know, those runs don't have a ninja-like quality.
It's actually what got him booked. Against Napoli was in bringing his instruments out with him.
Well, indeed, absolutely. There is every player gets a different sort of type of crisis of confidence. Adam, I feel as though Fabinho's has been space around him, space behind him, space he needs to run back into, space he's not that comfortable being in. And I think one of the things that happened, I think Konaté does help, but all of a sudden it felt to me like, you know, in that shape, he just understood what his space was. And I think that's part of why I think, you know, to the eye, he still has a couple of dodgy moments, still has a couple of strange touches, but ultimately wins enough of his battles against a really physical, tight unit, which is what Napoli are. He wins enough of his battles there to feel buoyed by it.
Goes back a little bit to what you were saying to me before about everybody kind of growing into the game a little bit, because I think his sort of first two involvements could have been yellow cards. Like they were really bad tackles, and I was like, oh Jesus wept, we've got this Fabinho, have we? He's not in the last of the 90. And then, as you say, he did sort of start to just get a little bit of confidence, grew into it a little bit, realised that maybe, you know, they weren't as tough a challenge as he'd kind of built himself up in his head for them to be, maybe. And was able to respond better to what was going on. But also, you know, there was more, as I say, kind of people fighting for each other. I felt, and that's kind of everyone. I feel like when the team has a bit of a crisis of confidence, like it's been having, everybody's sort of just focusing on their own thing, and there isn't much looking out for each other. But it did feel like that started to come back, and he's not been playing well. I think we'd all agree for maybe 6 months or more that, you know, he's not been playing well for quite a long time. And then on top of that, you've got no one's helping him. So he was really isolated. So he's not just playing not well, but he's also really isolated on top of that. But I thought that everybody was fighting for a little bit, for each other a little bit more. And that helped him as well. So he got to know his space, understood his space, but also the other people on the pitch were trying to help him more, I think.
As part of that as well, the other thing that I think helped everyone, Steve, was being able to get up the pitch and hold it there for periods. I think both Salah and Jones do that well. Salah then goes on post-match. It's really interesting about talking where he wants to be. But regardless, he just keeps scoring goals. It's mad to think that we don't feel like he's had quite the start of the season we would have liked, but he finds himself joint top scorer in the Champions League at this point. It's a reminder as to what he is at heart. Whatever his starting position is, he is a goal scorer, and he will always be a goal scorer.
Absolutely. Obviously, when he's in form like he can be, he'll be one of the best in the world at as well. So it's good to see him scoring them goals and getting the numbers in the Champions League. He just needs to sort of transfer these over to the Premier League now as well and start getting a few in there as well, which would be a massive help to the team. I thought him and Jones were pretty good most of the game. I thought Napoli kept a pretty tight ship. I thought they were quite impressive at the back, especially Kim. I thought was a fantastic.
He was great.
How quick was he, by the way? Oh my God. I've never seen anyone outrun Salah before, and he was so quick. But I thought the shape was so much better with someone actually hugging the left-hand touchline like Jones was, you know. I know he's got his detractors as well as his fans, so he'll feel like he had a bit of a point to prove him, you know, by far and away. It was his best performance. He's come back from injury, and the World Cup is probably coming at a really bad time for him. He's probably the only player you can say that about, because I think with the injuries we've got, he could really do with an extended run on the side or some games under his belt. But with Diaz and Jota being out, it's probably the perfect opportunity for him to do that. But there's only two games left till Boxing Day, so the World Cup is probably coming, as I said, a bit of a bad time for him. But yeah, I thought they were both excellent, and you know, hopefully we'll see similar sorts of output on Saturday, on Sunday.
It is great to see the goals keep coming for Mo Salah. Hope you're enjoying this edition of Tour Live, Liverpool in the hat for Monday's Champions League draw. I've got no real sense of what time it starts. I recognise I should know that in my job, to be quite honest with you, but I don't at this point in time. But also, I always feel like whenever someone tells me a start time for the UEFA draw, it's just a pack of lies. So the idea of very much hooking anything around it becomes remarkably difficult. Basically, someone will tell me when the draw is done. Or when it's about to start in terms of its realness. So do keep an eye out for that on Monday. We'll have loads of reaction to it on the Anfield Wrap. Looking forward to that. And also, we'll have loads of reaction to Spurs as well. Do download the app and mess about with it on there. You get some free tokens to listen to bits and pieces, including post-match stuff around Tottenham. But coming up right now on Tour Live, we've got a couple of really, really good segments. We've got Dom King on Jordan Henderson's book, and we've got Sean Davies. I'll be very clear about that one. I will remember that one as we go on her upcoming show at the Unity. That is to come if you listen to this podcast.
It's John Gibbons with a read-through courtesy of Green King, and Green King is your home of pub sports with over 900 sports pubs across the country. Green King is where the fans go, showing every broadcast game for Liverpool. So if you're wondering where to watch Spurs v Liverpool on Sunday afternoon, then you could do a hell of a lot worse than find your local Green King pub, because they show every live sports and event from BT and Sky Sports on tap. Also, if you download the Green King Season Ticket app, you can receive a free drink when you register and 10% off a great range of drinks 1 hour before, during and after any match. That's not just the Liverpool game, that is any match that they are showing. Green King, it's where the fans go, your home of pub sports. Also, if you go to the App Store, search Season Ticket to download the app, and when registering, if you use the promotion code Anfield Wrap, that's Anfield Wrap, one word, all capitals, Anfield Wrap, as a listener of this show, you'll get an additional £5 off when you spend £15 on drinks. So I've downloaded the app for when I go to the Clipper pub, the Mersey Clipper, which is right by Prenton Park, and I've used the apps and it couldn't be easier. So get yourself stuck in. So not only are you getting 10% off all your drinks with that Season Ticket app, then also an extra £5 off when you spend £15. So can't be bad as well. So download the app, find your nearest one. There's 900 across the country, so that shouldn't be too hard. And hopefully the Reds do the business on Sunday afternoon. And it is John Gibbons with Don King to talk about John Henderson's autobiography, which is out this week. And Don was involved in it. So first of all, Don, thanks for coming in. Appreciate
pleasure.
It.
It's a pleasure. Nice to be in here rather than over Zoom.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I guess my first question is, how does it come about? Because, you know, autobiographies, you know, a lot of footballers do them now, do them at sort of different stages of the career, and you know, we were aware of ghost writers, and in this case, plural. But how does it go about? Is you, because, you know, is it a big speed dating thing? Does he have to tell for it? How does
no,
it go?
No. To be truthful about it all, the first I'd heard about the book being done was Jordan spoke to me about it, and it was already pretty far down the line with Penguin and. Ollie Holt had been chosen to do the bulk of it, but I've known Jordan so long, basically since he arrived at the club, and I've been to so many places with him in terms of, you know, I covered his under 21 career with England, and I've done quite a few interviews with him down the years, and got to know him. Well, I'm fortunate to have got to know him, and he said he wanted me involved in some way to you know, to check things, check facts, check stories that refresh his memory with things, and it ended up becoming a real sort of it was a team effort, basically. I played a small part. Ollie did the bulk of everything with Jordan in during the summer. I think I put a tweet out last week, but it was a real privilege and an honour to be to ask him to do that. You know, it was meant the world, really.
Is it the first one you've done? Or
yeah.
I thought so. Yeah,
it was an amazing experience as well. Going down to Penguin and seeing their offices opposite the US Embassy in London, and hearing about their plans for it all and whatever, and you know, you're dealing with proper people, and you know, Penguin's reputation speaks for itself, doesn't it? It basically took up the bulk of my summer, and on the back of the season that had been, it was wasn't exactly a restful time, but to see it in print and to see it in the bookshops and whatever, it was, you know, real sort of proud moment.
What did you sense he wanted to get out of it, Don? Because, you know, he's a wealthy man, he's someone who's achieved a lot, and so it's even interesting to me that he already had the ghostwriter, then he wanted to get you involved because he's like, oh, you want to get it right. And that's the thing with footballers, they are, I guess, very competitive people, and so if they're going to do something, they want it to be as good as it will possibly be. But, yeah. But why do you think, what did you sense that he wants to, you know, achieve really from doing it? If that's the right way.
You're going to have to give me a bit of time with this answer, so I'll go through it all. He wanted to call the book With or Without Me, because he believes Liverpool would have won the trophies that they'd done with or without him. You know, he's a very selfless lad, and he's also someone, and it might sound pretty, there's a mad paradox there, but he's someone that doesn't like talking about himself, which might sound strange for someone who's done a book. The overriding message of the book is what you can achieve in life if you just do things properly and you work hard and you never give up and you you're prepared to pursue your dream and if you've got that sort of will within in yourself to overcome hurdles, you know, there's a few stories that, you know, he could have left Sunderland. He very nearly never made it at Sunderland. He very nearly never made it at Liverpool. I dare say there was a time when people would have thought he was not going to play for England.
Yeah.
But he's kept going. He's refused to sort of let setbacks, you know, define him. And I think if someone picks the book up and reads the, you know, can try and sort of put their lives in, you know, if there's hard moments or they're trying to achieve, you know, it's, you can accomplish things. This isn't a book about like going out to settle scores or anything like that. I mean, I've been asked about things like that, you know, has he had a go at anybody or anything? That's not him. It's just not the type of lad that he is. It's all about himself. He wants to help people, and it's, you know, I think it's, I might be biased, people might say I'm biased, and you know, such is life, but what he's achieved is quite is inspirational.
Yeah.
From the where he's come as a little boy, the people that he's got around him, that, you know, the support that he's had and what he's gone on to achieve. I think, you know, he should be incredibly proud of himself. Even though he finds it hard, he hates hearing praise about himself, which is just part of the lad that he is.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And it's, when you're talking there, Dom, I'm thinking about, you know, people often talk about him as a role model, and often that's because of what he's done off the pitch, in terms of, you know, the work he's done for the NHS, you know, how he's an ambassador for the LGBTQ community and how much that means to them. We did an event with Cop Outs last week, and how they speak about Jordan and Jürgen and their support, you know, is very much appreciated. And so, you know, when we talk about him as a role model, you know, it's very much of him as a person, but he's a role model for what he's done on the pitch as well. And that's what comes across when you were talking there now. And I'm thinking, because, you know, because of what he has achieved and because, as you say, it could have gone different ways at different times. And, you know, if I'm thinking why I think this book should happen, you know, the people who I'd love to read it is 15, 16-year-olds in academies and thinking, well, how do I get his career?
Yeah, you've just hit the nail on the head about it. You know, The Sunderland chapter is really interesting. Well, there's a couple of chapters on Sunderland, but he could really. They did think twice about it. They did think twice about whether he was going to make it, and he knuckled down. And the early chapter with Liverpool, and you know, when he went back into his room after finding out that the bid had come in from Fulham and they were ready to get shut of him, and he went back to his room in the Hope Street Hotel and he rang his dad up and he started crying and he said, I'm not going anywhere. I spoke to his dad about it and his dad was, it was interesting to hear his dad's perspective of it all, and he said, like, you know, he said, you're not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere. You're going to show them. He said, that's what you've always done in life. And, you know, he did. That's what he's done. And when Jürgen Klopp came in, he was worried about his position in the team, worried about whether he was going to make it with Klopp. Felt he had everything to prove, and you know, look at what they have gone on to achieve together.
Was anyone surprised you when you did the book in terms of stories? You know, because you mentioned there you've known him for a long time, you've almost sort of grown up with him. Well, he's grown up with you. You know, is there anything that you were like, oh, I didn't realise that had happened, or I didn't think that he'd have that perspective on that event?
Yeah, there's lots. There's lots of it. Stuff that there's a lot of interesting stuff around England, and I know people. I know we're on a Liverpool podcast, and I know the natural ambivalence from Liverpool fans towards England, but if you read the lengths that he goes through to play for England, particularly in the Euros, and the mental anguish that he went through after missing the penalty in the last 16 against Colombia at the World Cup, I think the detail that he's got into in those chapters about what he put his body through to get to play, and two, what he had to come over mentally after missing that penalty. I'd been speaking to him all the way through those tournaments, and I had no idea of some of the things that he'd gone through, because he's very good at not cracking on, basically. Yeah. So there's if something's wrong, but the Russia chapter when it'd been written, he was sort of looking back and he said, "Do you think people will be interested in this?" And I said, 100% it will. I said, "There's no point talking about England's journey through Russia, because everybody know what happened and how close it was. Nobody knows what you went through. Literally, nobody knows what you went through." And I was reading it back, and I went over and over it again. And I think it's the perfect insight into his character, really, to try and to get to understand him. That the chapter about England and the World Cup.
Yeah. I look forward to reading it. I've got the book. I haven't quite started yet. I'm really looking forward to reading it, and I'm reliving some of these, memories as well. For me, I'm interested to hear the stories and the insight, but also, he has been on the pitch, captain of some of the greatest moments in this football club's history, and I'm sure that's touched on as well.
Oh my, absolutely. The one thing, the love that he's got for Liverpool. The pride that he's got of being the captain, the bond that he's got with the squad and the fans, and what he's done over particularly over the last 7 years, it all comes through. The chapter of the Champions League win is amazing. Mm-hmm. To get from his viewpoint, particularly getting the moments of getting his hands on the trophy. I'm fortunate to see an awful lot of things in my life with Liverpool, but I would have that night in Madrid as the best of all.
Yeah,
I really would, because of how they got there, because of some of the things that went on the way, like the win in Munich.
Yeah.
And Barcelona, everybody knows about Barcelona now, but I just think that because there was so much riding on that night.
Was the night after the company goal, and
I mean the actual final itself. Oh yeah, right. There was so much riding on that, having lost out on the league by a point and whatever, and not saying that things would have gone a different way had they not won in Madrid, but they would have been known as the nearly men.
Yeah.
And that sort of breaking the spell, if you will, of winning that night in Madrid was just the highlight of his career.
What do you sense from him that he feels he's got left, just to sort of finish off Don? Because he's brought a book out now. For some people, it's like, that's sort of part of retirement, really. But listen, I mean, Andy Robertson's brought a book out. He's not sort of close to going. So different people can do things at different times. Yeah. There's Henderson is someone who's talked about a lot amongst Liverpool fans. Different opinions and. But I think all of us accept that there is an element of decline in terms of what he's able to do with his body and his performances. Now, what do you sense from him that he feels he's got left? And also this team's got left, because he is the captain of it.
Yeah, it's a really good question, a difficult question to ask, to answer from my point of view, in terms of, for me, he's contracted for another 3 years.
Two and a half years.
He's wise enough to know that that things will change in the next couple of years. They look to bring fresher legs in, younger legs. That's just the way football goes. I mean, he's but in terms of sort of a statement, if you will. But I mean, the sort of love and desire that he's got to see Liverpool do well. I mean, at the minute, the way the results have been, is I would say it's been a challenge.
Yeah.
I wouldn't exactly say he's been in the greatest of humours recently. No, but his desire to be part of a club that is responsible for bringing good times to a city and a fan base, and the pride that he's got in being the sort of focal point of it, that's never going to change. And he'll be here helping in whatever way he can. You know, the role that he does behind the scenes as well, I think, you know,
yeah,
in terms of setting standards, how he looks after himself as well. And I still think, you know, he mightn't play 40, you know, 50, 60 games a year now, but I still think when he plays, they're a better team when he's in it.
Absolutely. The book is available now. As I said, I haven't started yet, but really looking forward to getting stuck into it. But thanks so much for coming in, Dom, for your insight into our captain. Really appreciate your time.
Pleasure.
And it is John Gibbons for Tour Live. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the Homotopia Festival, because Homotopia, people might have seen, we linked up with recently, along with the LFC Foundation, to do something around rainbow laces and something, you know, around the campaigns that the Liverpool Football Club and all football clubs in the Premier League are doing to make football more inclusive. But Homotopia, their day job, if you like, or the biggest thing that they do, is a festival every year, which is taking place over the next 2 weeks. And one of the artists, Axe, well, we'll see what Sean wants to call himself on that, is joining us now. So, Sean Davis, thanks so much for coming to join us this morning. Appreciate your time.
No problem. Hiya. Nice to be here.
First of all, Homotopia is over the next couple of weeks. How pleased are you to be part of that, first of all?
Really excited. Like, I, as a queer artist in Liverpool, it's great to be part of the festival. I always enjoy like attending Homotopia events. So to be part of it is just fantastic. And there's so much going on as well, from like, you know, art exhibitions to workshops to theatre performances. There's just tons of stuff that people can get involved in. So even if you think, you know, queer arts aren't for you, there's definitely something there that you can be like, huh, that's cool, that is for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Something for everyone. But the main event, of course, is a week Saturday, next Saturday night, the 12th of November at the wonderful Unity Theatre. And that is when Sian is bringing her award-winning comedy to us. This Charming Man is the name of the show. Tell us a bit more about it, Sian.
Yeah, so it's a brand new show, and it's about my relationship with the Smiths and with Morrissey in particular, and all of the other toxic male role models that I've had in my life. So it's a stand-up show. You know, I'm a stand-up comic, so it's a tongue-in-cheek look at things like that. You know, growing up, I loved the Smiths, and growing up, I had a lot of male role models. And it's just a look at how that's affected me and how that's come about in my life. And it's, you know, it's about gender identity. It's about toxic masculinity. But it's also about, you know, having fun. And it's a feel-good show. And it's, I think there'll be a lot of surprises in there. Like, people that have seen me do stand-up before, this is a very different show, very different show. There's a lot of like more kind of theatre-y, performance-y elements to it that's new for me, which is really exciting. So like the first time working with like lighting and sound cues and video clips and things like that. So yeah, I'm really excited for it.
As you say, it sounds brilliant, but as you say, it's a relationship with men and with role models, really. And, you know, it's the title, This Charming Man of Morrissey. And he is an interesting one, isn't it? Because he's one that so many people do look up to. And then so when he acts out to do it in the same way, it's almost like it's a disappointment, isn't it? It's, how could you do that to me after I've invested so much of myself in you?
Absolutely. And you know, it's that thing where like you know, I've got the Smiths lyrics tattooed on me, and then like you're gonna come out and be like a massive racist, like what what are you doing to me? Like, come on,
it's hard not to take it personally though, isn't it?
It is, it really is. And it's the same with like any form of sort of fandom or like a role model that you might have, where you know, you invest so much in them and you think, wow, you know, this person's absolutely seeing into my soul with the art they've produced, and then they go and do something, you're like, maybe not. But can you still enjoy, like, can we still enjoy the old Smith songs? Can we, can't we? Should we be listening to them? Do we want him to get our music from the streams on Spotify? Now we know what his views are. And it's just sort of, it's asking that question, and it's asking, you know, can we still learn the lessons that we learned from those role models, even when that relationship goes bad or goes toxic or turns sour? And I think the answer is, well, it'll be revealed in the show, what I think. But, you know, there's it's nuanced, isn't it? It's not just black and white. It's not just one or the other. So, yeah.
But I think it's better to ask these questions, isn't it? And better still, if you can ask it in a humorous way, than be someone who, you know, what we see a lot in society, happens in music, happens in football, is that, you know, when there'll be people who will back their heroes to the hilt, even if it is an undefensible position. And as I say, you see that, you know, with football tribalism, but very much sort of in music as well. And I'm sure there's Morrissey super fans who won't hear a word against him, no matter what he does and says.
Absolutely, yeah. I'll probably might be some protests, who knows? I might
Well, that'd be exciting, wouldn't it?
He might come down himself, who knows? He doesn't like people saying stuff about him, so we'll see. But yeah, I think you're right. There's that's definitely that thing of people just backing, you know, backing that view and backing that thing because it is their hero. And I think sometimes you've got to draw the line and you've got to distance yourself and you've got to say, yeah, I absolutely love this piece of your work, or I absolutely loved it when you did that, but this bit, not so much, you know?
Oh, absolutely. It's at the Unity Theatre, which, as I said before, I absolutely love. Closed for a bit of a refurb a while ago, but feels back, and it feels to me, I don't know what you think, it's back and better than ever, really.
Oh, I love the Unity. It's a fantastic space and a fantastic place to just be, just to hang out. Like, there's always stuff going on, and like quite often you'll pop in to see one show and then you're like, oh, there's another show happening straight after. So you end up sort of, you know, having a drink in the bar, then watching something else that maybe you weren't there to see, but is actually really cool. Like, you know, from sort of, I went to see something the other day that was just like a script in hand read through of a new play. And, you know, it was like £5 for the ticket, and it was brilliant. And you know, you just think there's so much that goes on around the Unity. They do lots of like meetups for creative people, and like they do workshops and things like that. And it's a really nice space, a really sort of community-led space. And it's a lovely place to be, a lovely place to hang out.
Yeah,
and it used to be a synagogue as well. I didn't know that.
I did not know that.
You can see like the old sort of stained glass and stuff like that they've reused in like some of the bar areas and things. And yeah. It's a really cool place.
I never knew that. Oh, there we are. Every day's a school day. speaking of school, congratulations. Best in class at the Edinburgh Comedy Award panel this year. That must have been quite cool.
Yeah, it was massive, to be honest. So, like, best in class, I'm not expecting anyone to know about it, but best in class won a massive award. And what we do with best in class is we're a crowdfunded profit sharing operation that gives working class comics the opportunity to get up to Edinburgh Fringe and do what they do best, because the Edinburgh Fringe is very restrictive financially. It costs an awful lot of money to be there, and a lot of people that aren't from an affluent background have been absolutely priced out of it. But as a comedian, you do need to go to the Fringe to make connections, to get seen, to sort of find an agent, all those things. They all happen up in Edinburgh, so it's really important to make sure we get working class voices up there, so that we don't just get one homogenized voice within, you know, within comedy on TV and radio and stuff like that. And yeah, after plugging away and just sort of doing it for, you know, for many years, I started it in 2018, and we've took around 8 a year we've taken up to Edinburgh, and this year we got recognised by the big boys. So the Edinburgh Comedy Awards gave us the panel prize, which was massive, really, and quite a shock and quite unbelievable. So,
yeah. It's fantastic, and presumably it was something that may help you to get bigger and to grow more, and to, you know, it helps with funded applications, these sorts of things, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, the panel prize, as well as a lovely trophy, we got some money, and that sort of means that at the minute, we were kind of just hand to mouth. We'd raise some money, then we'd spend some money. We'd raise some money, then we'd spend some money. Whereas this money has given us the opportunity to get a bit more longevity out of it, and just to sort of, you know, set ourselves up for future years and be like, okay, well, we can now say that for the next 3 or 4 years, our overheads are met, you know, things like that. And to turn it from a sort of we don't know what we're doing kind of operation, which is what it kind of was at the start, into something a bit more organized, and with a bit more sort of value to it. So yeah.
Well, congratulations on Omega Continue. What you're doing is obviously fantastic. So, yeah, thank you for doing that. And obviously, you know, congratulations. But to focus back on yourself, Sean, as to finish, as I say, the show is at Saturday the 12th of November. It's part of Homotopia Festival. Do check out everything they're doing over the next couple of weeks. As Sean very rightly says, there is something for absolutely everyone. But we encourage you to go and see Sean on Saturday the 12th of November. If you've not been to the Unity before, it's a fantastic opportunity to do so. Liverpool play at 3 o'clock. The event's at 9 o'clock. You've got loads of time in between to get some food and get sort of down there. It is £8 full price, £6 concession. As Sean says, they price things keenly at the Unity to attract everyone. But Sean, lovely to meet you. Thanks for coming on. Really nice to chat and best of luck with the show.
Thanks very much.
And we're back. If you weren't listening to this as a podcast but enjoying it as a video, that was a very, very, very short break indeed. And it was at 18:58 for the keen eyed amongst you. Check your bingo cards accordingly. One of you get a big prize by the time we get round to Christmas. It is always, always great to be here on a Friday afternoon. So do join us. It's around 4-ish. We start this and we get stuck in and we imagine what the weekend is going to hold from a Liverpool point of view. And Adam, I'll start with you this time. Tottenham, their injury hit, which... I mean, I feel genuinely sorry for Son. I'd rather not face him, don't get me wrong, but a fractured eye sockets, let's be clear, sound like no barrel of laughs. When lads are out with a bit of a calf injury, it's one of them where you get to go, oh, well, I'm glad he's not playing against us. I really can't summon up that enthusiasm for a fractured eye socket for a footballer, to be honest with you. But the other concern for this as well is the fact that Tottenham are injury hit, the fact that it's Liverpool coming to town. All of it will therefore justify what I'm expecting to be pretty negative tactics from Tottenham for much of the game, both in the eyes of their players and their supporters. They will be backs against the wall, and I think that will suit Antonio Conte down to the ground.
Very much so. Very much so, yeah. Son is one of those players that I wish we had bought years ago. I really like him. I think he's a brilliant player, but also he's got that snide. He's really snidey player, but he gets away with it because everyone thinks he's dead nice. So he gets to be really snide and everyone's like, oh, he's lovely, Son, isn't he? And he, meanwhile, he's tripping people up and kicking them and all that sort of stuff. So I would have loved him at Anfield because we don't have enough of that. We don't have enough snide. And yeah, I think the big thing that Jürgen's going to have to kind of drill into his players is let's not have every single person camped on the edge of their box if we're trying to break them down, because they can hit you on the counter like nobody's business. They're so good at hitting you on the counter. Alistair Kinnaird, apologies about the pronunciation there, I just said this is nil-nil written all over it. I don't see that. I really don't, because I just think that they are so good on the counter. This has very much got, Tottenham scoring written all over it for me, especially if we do the daft thing we've been doing of having Trent playing centre mid or attacking midfielder for most of the game when they're camped out in their box. I'll be honest, I'm not looking forward to it at all. I'm really not, but I hope, a little bit like I was saying before, to continue my metaphor of the having pissed off the partner, this is when they go out and buy you a lovely present and come back and you feel all better about it. That's what I'm hoping for, is a lovely present off the Reds to make me feel less like more like an idiot for forever doubting them, my dear loves.
They will need to be less like idiots, Steve. This is the key thing here. I think that's what Adam's sort of saying there as well about where they position themselves. They can't get sucked into nonsense. They've got to find their way through the game. You know, it's worth pointing out, we have had very, very few red cards under Jurgen Klopp. We get one in this fixture last season with Robertson. Obviously Kane should have got sent off earlier on. I've really felt that day like Liverpool got very much swept along, and there was obviously players missing as well, but Liverpool got swept along by the game of football. It was a massive atmosphere there and it became a game of basketball where Tottenham arguably came off better. Now, obviously they are missing a couple, but you feel like we can't be sucked into that this time. We've got to have the sense to play through phases of the game, take our time, nothing daft Liverpool from minute one.
Yeah, as you've been saying on most shows, no gifts. You know, Christmas is coming, but it's no time for gifts yet. I mean, we just need nothing stupid from the word go.
I'll go up to you, Siobhan. I mean, he's just dropped back into saying mad decisions in a way. That's all. Yeah. I mean, I can't disagree with him from what I've heard, Siobhan, because
this is a bit like Paul Tierney's refereeing performance last season against Spurs.
That's what I was saying.
It is Siobhan one where, as I say, I think Tierney doesn't help last season either. The crowd don't help, obviously. The crowds are great for them. They're up for it. Tierney doesn't help. The fact that they just throw Dele Alli in from nowhere and he sort of rolls back the years to an extent for them, at least for half an hour or 45 minutes. That is my, you know, it's a really weird thing to say because they're ahead of us. It's Andy Madley on Sunday. They're ahead of us in the league markedly, but I feel a bit like we need this to be as sane a game of football as possible, because if it is, I think we're just better than them. And as I say, there's a gulf between the two sides, but I just think we're better than them. So if a normal game of football happens, what tends to happen is the team that are better wins.
Yeah, absolutely. Like last season was just so chaotic and had very little structure, very little sense to it from minute one. I think the emotions definitely got the better of a lot of people. As we've both pointed out, you know, the refereeing performance was a farce. But I think that I'm running out of game-to-game narratives for positivity this season, because after every game where something good happens, you can go, right, if we can just do that, if we can just take that into the next game, and it hasn't really been translating that way. After City, we all said, you know, that could be the turning point. I think there was an extremely mature way to win a game in midweek, albeit the goals were a bit balmy. There was an extreme, you know, as you said before, like feeling your way into the game, ticking along, getting your basics broadly right, taking your time, not making any huge mistakes, no gifts, like you said. And I think playing a good team in midweek has probably helped, because if possible, could you just do the same, please? Could you just, you know, go in, don't do anything stupid in the first 15 minutes. Hold on to the ball, maybe. Don't give it away needlessly. You know, they're gonna have a big crowd. Obviously, everyone will be right up for it Sunday afternoon. In midweek, for the first hour, it was anyone's game, but it felt extremely measured and controlled, and I'd like to see the same again this time around. And I think, as you said, it's the only way to win.
I think they'll want us to get in our heads, Adam, and that's the other thing. I think that, you know, you're able to look at the... We spent a lot of time this season not creating good enough chances at level, score lines, or behind. And I think that Tottenham, if you're Conte, you'll be saying, firstly, we're good at limiting quality chances. Secondly, if we just hang in, these will give us something at some stage. And that is, so I don't think the 0-0 shout a million miles away in a couple of ways. In that, I can see loads of ways in which it doesn't happen, not least one being Liverpool actually, in a wonderful way, managed to find a way to open in the score and relatively early in the game. I think that would really break it apart, because I think if you're Conte, with the injury doubt, with not just doubts, you've got no Son, you've got no Richarlison, you've got no Kulusevski, so it's going to be almost certainly Kane and Moura up top. You're very much about holding position. You're very much about, there's one big chance in this game and we take it. And I think Liverpool have got to, as much as possible, ensure, firstly, that big chance for Tottenham doesn't come, but secondly, they don't get sucked into another 90 minutes where they're doing their own heads in from minute one.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And that's where, an early goal would just, for them, would just be the worst thing, because that would just be everybody going off, we're back here, we're doing this again, this old nonsense. I think that would be really, it'd be really tough to recover from after, exactly as Siobhan says, a really good performance against Napoli, and kind of, you know, a good team, a very good team, a good performance against a very good team. And if you can carry that spirit over into the next game and start well, even if we're not scoring, but if we can have sort of first, the opening 15 minutes where there's just not a lot of anything apart from us creating chances, that will give them growing confidence. The reverse of that is if there is, again, as Steve mentioned, as you've said before, if there's a gift from us for some reason, then that's exactly what we won't want, and they will gobble it up and we'll be going, shit, we still haven't turned a corner, we still haven't done any of those things. And then, as you say, back in their own heads, back worrying about the same old things over and over again. So the opening 15 minutes for me will be big, just in don't give them anything. Just go in there, be confident, but don't be stupid. No stupidity. I'm sick of seeing stupid Liverpool from a team that we've grown to think are really mature and sensible over the years. I am bored to tears by them being stupid all the time. I'm stupid enough for everybody. You do the sensible stuff will be my argument.
There is then for us, stay, you know, Henderson's back in the shake-up, as we said earlier on. There's actually a couple of positive decision-making headaches for the manager. You know, he's got a if it, firstly, does he stick with 4-3-3? That's my question one to you, Steve. My second question is, if he does, who starts in the middle of the park? Because I think we can expect the defence to be Trent Alexander-Arnold, Konate, Van Dijk and Robertson. So the second question becomes, who starts in the middle of the park? And then the third question becomes, who starts up front? So, you know, if you want to have a go at all three of those, do you think he'll stick with the system first and foremost?
I hope so. We look so much more compact and so much more defensively solid on Wednesday, on Tuesday against Napoli. So for me, I'd hope he goes for the 4-3-3 again. And now he's got Henderson, Fabinho and Thiago all available, all fit. I'd like to see him go with them three in the middle. And then it's who he goes for up front, really. I'd be surprised if it's anyone else but Nunes, Firmino and Salah, really. I think this is his cup final side now, but the strongest available side, he needs to go there. We need to get some kind of results.
So you'd start Nunes off the left?
I would, yeah. I mean, I'd like to see him through the middle, but I think Carvalho would probably be the only other option out there. Jones, maybe. But I don't know if Jones is quite ready for another, after playing 90, well, playing a lot of minutes midweek. I think you might see Nunes out there. I think he might go as strong as he can through up with the front three.
Is that what you think, Siobhan?
I just wonder, is there a space for Elliot out wide instead? That's the only thing I'd say, really. I know that he's probably not had his best run, but I just don't know. I think someone really energetic alongside whoever's in the middle would be really would help, as long as you're having a good game.
Adam, what do you think of all that?
Yeah, I generally agree. I really want to see Nunez. I do not really want to see Firmino, if I'm honest. I didn't think he played very well on Tuesday. I was having a chat with Sanchetti, who disagrees with me and thought he played really well, but I thought his touch was awful. I thought his passing was not great. I think he's just played too much. And I think that him dropping deep has always worked really well when the rest of the structure of the team is in place. But when the team structure has been so all over the show and people have been so unsure of what they're doing, him dropping deep has just not really helped anybody. And I think that in a weird way, the goals has masked things, that masked the level of his performances. I don't think he's been playing that well, but he's been scoring goals, so we've kind of ignored it. I would not, if I saw a team sheet that did not have Firmino in it, I would not be disappointed. But also, I'd be really happy if he made me look a twat. So.
He loves a goal at Spurs as well, doesn't he? He loves a goal at Spurs.
I wondered on Firmino whether or not the manager will in general want to have a sub. And if that sub is Firmino, I'm absolutely fine with that for this one. The idea, it's not quite what we wanted to be on 60. Guess what? The game's now different. We're bringing this fella on. And whether that leads to something that's a bit more 4-2-3-1 or it's just different personnel, I sort of wonder if that might be good. I am all for him starting Jones again left-hand side for an hour, just solely off the basis of the fact that I think he'll really help the shape. And then you sort of go from there. I wouldn't have a problem with another hour of Curtis Jones off the left, just holding it up, bringing people into play and Liverpool going from there. But we'll see what he does. I'm not going to ask you for a prediction because it feels unfair. Si Hai agreeing with Adam there in the comments that Bobby wasn't good on Tuesday. I was more concerned about the fact that I just don't think he was holding it up that well, not just the idea of the pass. I think it's hard for him to look after it against really physical sides, and Tottenham are a big team. An enormous team, performed brilliantly all season on set pieces, both for and against, because of the size of them. And I think it's going to be a big, big, big physical battle. Siobhan, are you confident?
Yeah. Yeah. Reluctantly, yeah. It's like I'd rather not be, because I'm sick of being made feel a fool. But yeah, yeah.
Reluctantly confident.
Reluctantly confident, yeah. I think that's my personality type, actually.
Reluctantly confident, yeah. Adam, are you confident, reluctantly or otherwise?
I am not. I am not very confident.
That shocks me, Adam. Honest,
you wouldn't get that from what I've said in this show, but yeah, no, I'm not overly confident, although reluctantly confident has been my acting style for about 12 years. So,
excellent. It's good to see it summing up everyone's performance. Steve Evans, are you reluctantly confident?
No, I'm confident. I think Spurs will have a big, big, big win midweek. I think they'll have a bit of the cases after the Lord's Mayor show. I think they would have pulled on to that game in Marseille. They could see them celebrating a little bit after the game, and I think hopefully we'll catch them where they might just be a little bit of hangover from that game. So I'm hoping, always back to Reds. I think we'll go there and get a result.
So, Steve, you think we're winning because Spurs have had a pint? Is that what it is?
Absolutely.
wonderful. That's the insight you can get at the Anfield Wrap. excellent stuff indeed. Thank you very much to Siobhan, to Steve, and to Adam. Andy Heaton for producing. And in there as well, Sean Davis, Dom King, and John Gibbons all the way through. That it has been your tour live. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope it's set the weekend up for you. Liverpool play nicely at 4:30 on Sunday. So whatever mad thing they do, it's not happening to you until at least 4:30 on Sunday. But I too am confident. I have a feeling it might be a bit more of a mad one in terms of eventual scoreline. I wonder whether or not Tottenham Hotspur are not far away from being crisis club, which feels like a very strange thing to say. But I think there's been a lot of them grabbing results from the fire and it covering performance-based deficiencies for them over the course of the campaign. And I don't think they're having very much fun. But anyway, we have had Siobhan, Steve, Adam. I've been Neil Atkinson. See you later.
Sports Social Podcast Network.